Today's daf Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Kuf Beit. We're holding, even though we did the mission at the beginning of the parak, I think it's kedai for us just to review it again quickly, and that way it'll be fresh. All right, so we started off with the story of Yevano Seir Aisha, Upaskar Mokadesh Yazunet Bita Chameshanim, Chayav Lezuna Chameshanim. Somebody makes a deal, and he says he's going to take care of the daughter of a woman that he marries from a previous marriage, Chora had a daughter. He has to keep that yitchayvut of 5 years. Now, it's not clear at all how exactly he was mechayev himself. How does one go about being mechayev himself? Is this like a verbal stipulation, or is that enough? Is a written stipulation enough? That the Gemara is going to talk about. No, in the event that he gets divorced from this woman, she goes and marries somebody else, and she gets the new guy. This is a real smart woman. She makes a deal with the new guy that he also is promising to take care of her. Maybe she does this once a week, who knows? But anyway, so the first guy still has to pay the chamesh shanim, and they can't argue. So the first one can't say, well, obviously, I mean, I'm ready to pay when she comes to me and I'm married to her. But I mean, how do you think I was going to take care of her even when they're not married? That doesn't make sense. So you can't say that. You made an agreement to pay for her daughter. That was an agreement of like when you went into the marriage with her. And he's got to actually go ahead and bring her food wherever it is that her mother lives, assuming that's where she is living. The Gemara is going to be medayik from her about divorce and who gets the kids. It says over here that he takes the kids, he takes it to where she is with her mother. Not only that, but the two husbands can't get together and say, let's between us, we're going to be taking care of her. You know, she made the same deal with me as she did with her first husband, so we'll just all split it between us. No, one of them actually provides the food, and one of them provides the cash value of the food. So echad zanah v'echad noten la d'mei mizonot. Even if the girl goes in and gets married, and now the baal is still mechuyev mizonot, because that's part of every responsibility. So the baal will give her the mizonot, and then they have to give her the price of the mizonot. So now she's collecting pretty well over here. And if the meitu, the first two guys, died, so here's the crazy situation. Their own daughters, if they had like children with that wife, you know, so their own daughters are going to be a part of either the heirs, or they are the, if we're going to see the Tanai and the Ksuva, that gives them support as their daughters until they're married and so on. But they only can collect that from the Chasim B'nei Chorin because they have a din of Yorshim. Masha Enkein, this daughter, who is a stepdaughter, she can go ahead and she can take that money even from the chasim that was sold, and then the chasim Mishu Abadim, because she, after all, is the Baalat Chov, where the others are just heirs. At first, we have to clear all the chovot after the person dies before we can split up his property, right? So, okay, so that means that she comes first. Incredible. So if anybody's got brains, a pikrin, when they would be willing to get into a situation like this, they would make it clear that hayukotfim, now this is interesting, because over here it says hayukotfim. It doesn't say anything about writing anything before, right? It just said that he agreed to. Now here it seems that there's some kind of document about this, and this again, the Gemara is going to be medayit. So the pikrin hayukotfim amanat shazunet biktei chamesh shanim kozman shatimi. As long as you stick with me as my wife, so then I'll take care of your kids. But certainly, if anything happens to our marriage, then I am not going to be taking care of your kids. All right, that's where we had gotten up to. And now we're interested in how did the person manage to be Mechayev himself to take care? I mean, what was this done? Was it done in front of Aiden? Did he make a kinyan? How exactly is it chal? So itma. This seems similar to a case. If somebody says to another guy, Chayav ani lecha mana, I owe you a mana. Okay. And that's all he did. Rabbi Yochanan is in that case. Rabbi Yochanan says, yeah, he's going to have to pay that mana. Reish Lakish says, he's not going to have to pay that mana. But what are we talking about? Did he appoint people that were standing near and said, listen, you be my witnesses. I am admitting that I owe this guy in front of you. So then why would Reish Lakish argue? We know it's a Beferish Mishnah, but if somebody says Bifnei Edim and he's Miyachid them as Edim, then he is Mitchayev on the basis of Hoda Atzbaldin. Says, I owe you $100. And if he didn't say to them, Atem Edim, so then why in the world would Reb Yochanan say that you're Chayev? It says Beferish over there in the Gemara on that Mishnah, that you are not chayev if you didn't make it clear that you want them to be your edim. And that's because we have many possibilities for why somebody would say something like this. I mean, it could be playing games, obviously, but he could also be, and this is a very important yesod in the Gemara, he could also be saying this in order to make it look like he is not in good financial shape. And the reason that people would do that is because if people see that he's got a lot of money and so on, so, you know, they either they come after him, it's an INR or whatever it is, but people like to be mamayit in their wealth. And because of that, he said it, but he didn't mean it because he wants people to get the feeling that he's been borrowing money and he owes a lot of people money and so on. Fine. But in any event, Rabbi Yochanan would have no right to go against the whole sugya over there and say that he is chayev. So what's the case? Answers the Gemara, the truth is, he did not say Atem Edim. So why in the world is he chayev? Because Achmaya Skinan, the Omar Le, chayav ani lechamana bishtar. What he did was, is he actually wrote it in on a piece of paper. He didn't sign it, but he wrote an IOU in his handwriting. So Rabbi Yochanan says, since it's written in a actual note, so Alima Milta Dishtara, Kamande Amalahu Atem Edai. The very fact that he was willing to write this down is the same thing as telling the Edim Atem Edai, because the whole point over here is that in order to make it an absolutely serious kind of Amida in front of these people, you need to make it clear that you're serious. Okay, so normally make it clear that you're serious. You say, you be my witnesses. Then you cannot taina mishateh ani b'chah, that I'm playing games. But if you write it down, so Rabbi Yochanan holds, the very fact that something is written in a person's own hand, it is a reason why it would be the equivalent seriousness of saying atem edai. Now, what's interesting is that the problem is that usually an IOU that you write in your own handwriting, even if it isn't signed, is enough to be mechayev you. So Rashi says that that Mishnah is talking about specifically where you identify yourself. So you say, I, Ploni ben Ploni, am mitchayev. And since it's in your own handwriting, so it's the equivalent of a signed IOU. But here we're not talking about that. Here it's the equivalent of basically committing to something. And all that's important is the extent of the seriousness of the commitment. So what's important to realize over here is that both Rashi and Tosfos understand the whole machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish is not being mechayev yourself. It's admitting that you are chayev because you had a previous arrangement, that whatever, a sale, a loan, but you can't be mechayev yourself by saying that I am chayev to you. Masha Enkin, there are Rishonim that learn that there is a way that you could be mechayev yourself with a shtar, according to Rabbi Yochanan. And that therefore it's talking about over here that I am now being mitchayev. But we'll learn the sugya the way that Rashi and Tosfos learn it. So in this case, what are they arguing about? They're arguing about the overall question of the level of seriousness of edus, shtarais, and as we'll see, there are a number of different things that are koveya, the extent of when we are able to consider something to be a real itchayvut or a hodah for itchayvut. And that includes, as we know, a kinyan, which is a kinyan sudar, and it includes other cases, such as shchiv meira, where over there even a oral itchayvut is considered to be binding, again, because dying is a very serious thing. And because of that, we take his words very seriously. And we're going to see another case, which we're about to apply to our Mishnah, that that's also considered to be serious enough to be binding, despite the fact that we don't have any of the Atamei Dai, and we don't have a written signature, anything like that. So now the question is, of course, the whole reason that we're bringing this here is to understand our Mishnah. Now the Mishnah says somebody marries a woman and he agrees to her demand that he takes care of his daughter, her daughter, for 5 years. It says that he is chayev. Mazuna chamesh shanim. So what are we talking about over here? I mean, aren't we talking about a case just like this, where he agreed, he gave her a little piece of paper that said, I agree, didn't sign it. And it, I mean, if he really made a shtar with Edim, I mean, obviously, why would the Mishnah have to tell us any of this? So apparently, it's exactly this case. And the Mishnah is saying, like Rabbi Yochanan, if you agree to do something like that, so then you're stuck and you're going to have to do it. Says the Gemara, no, not necessarily. Because the same way that we've mentioned the things that make something serious, and this was the question, whether just writing a note is serious enough, but certainly saying Atenei Dai, or certainly making a kinyan. This is talking about an additional special case of seriousness, which is called shtore psikta. So over here, when people are getting together and they are making the arrangements for a marriage, we call this a tnoyim. It used to be that the tnoyim was a major thing. Nowadays, we don't really do real tnoyim because there's so many breakups and that creates a lot of problems because breaking up with the tnoyim is considered to be a terrible thing and people are very nervous about it. So they wait until the last minute before they even write up a shtar like this. But here it's talking about that in the event that the two sides got together, the parents of the bride and the parents of the groom, and like Rav Gittel said, the Yom Rav Gittel Amarav, in the event that the father of the Kala says to the father of the Chasen, so how much are you ready to put into this marriage for your son? Going to support him in Kailah? How many years? Good Lord. So he says, kach v'kach. And then he says, and how about you giving for your daughter? And he says, also kach v'kach. If at that point they go ahead and they make Kiddushin, that's not 100% according to all of the Rishonim that it has to be right away that they make Kiddushin, but that if this is the arrangement they made for the Kiddushin, it's binding. And these are called Ein Ein Advarim HaNiknin Ba'amira. I do not need to make a kinyan. The very fact that this was such a serious undertaking, because we understand, it's not just the seriousness of it, it's the overall sense of the context, that people are really willing to do this kind of thing, to get their kids married off and so on, and we'll see. And therefore, I don't need to be persuaded that this is important with a kinyan. So in this case, that's exactly what happened. So over here, the Mishnah, even though we don't have a shtar, and we didn't say Atamei Dai, in this case, it was done at that time when they were making all the other arrangements between them, and she says, okay, but I need to have my daughter supported. And therefore, the Chiddush in the Mishnah is that even if you didn't make any kind of kinyan, it's considered to be an actual chiyav on you, in which it's the same as the shtar psikta, and then you can actually write this up, and it becomes, we're going to see what the din is of writing it up, whether that gives you rights like normal shtar does, which is you're able to collect from Mishubadim, that we're going to talk about. But in any event, the case in our Mishnah is that it was a yitchayvut as the equivalent of psikta, in which case Rav Gittel would say no kinyan is necessary. And that's all that we need to prove that he committed it. So, therefore, there's nothing to do with the machlokas of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. Toshma. Okay, how about the Mishnah in Bechorot? Now, we know that if somebody wants to be poda his son by giving an IOU to a Kohen, IOU Chamisha Slaim, that's not going to be a valid Chamisha Slaim because we learn out from the Pasuk that we actually need to pay, not by committing ourselves to pay. What's more, it says in the Mishnah that he would still be chayev to pay chamesh shloim. But even if he pays, it's not considered to be the chamesh shloim for the pidyon haben. And we look at it as saying that, okay, you just admitted that you owe this kohen chamisha shloim. What does it have to do with being paid to the child? Now, over here, we have exactly the same situation. An IOU without anything, no edim, no signatures, according to Rish Lakish, it should not have said in the Mishnah, I'm chayef to pay him. If the Mishnah says you are chayef to pay him, so then it's a clear raya to Rabbi Yochanan. No, says the Gemara. Shiny hatam, that's different. Because since Rish Lakish says like this, it's not that you're paying him because of the fact that you admitted that you owed him. It's because of the fact that since there is a chiyuv b'diraisa, where you are meshubet to a coin to be put in your son, so then, because of that, what you're saying is that you're taking that shibud upon yourself. But enochinami, if there wouldn't have been the context, so then it wouldn't have meant anything, according to Rish Lakish. I understand, says Gemara. I mean, if you're telling me that he has to pay the coin because of the shibud d'oraisa, what's the point of writing this up? I mean, it has nothing to do with writing it. He should have just, either he gives him the money or not. Now, the point of writing it was to be mevarer lo kohen. So he wrote this in order to make it clear that this is the coin that I'm going to be using for the pidyon haben. I don't understand. So then you're saying that the money was given for pidyon haben. I understand that an IOU is not good enough for the pidyon haben, but once he actually pays it, why in the world does it say that that's not good enough? He paid the complete chamisha shkalim. I'll tell you why. But it's really like Ula says. This is a special gzera. The truth is that, of course, the moment that he gives the money to the kohen, Tvar Torah, Padui L'Kishi Yitain, he gave over chamisha shkalim, that's it. So why did we say in the Mishnah it's not good enough? Because we're afraid. And we made a gzera that people might learn from this that an IOU is a kosher pidyon. And the truth is that it is not a kosher pidyon midiraisa. It has to be gufoi momon. And a shtar is by definition not gufoi momon. So if at the time that he pays it, he paid it, so then obviously that's fine. But since people may not know that, so they'll get confused. They'll think that I can use a signed IOU from somebody else to me, give it over to you, right? Or people can think that even if you write your own IOU, that you're going to be able to be before you pay it. And that, since you're not able to be paid with shtarot, that would be ending up where you never were mekayim the pidyon haben. So we made a gzera not to use an IOU even as a modality to select the kohen, and that if you do, even when you pay up, you would still have to go and give money in order for the ben to be padui. That way everyone will know the IOU wasn't paid yet. Okay, so now we understand the Mishnah. It's just a way of tying into the shibud d'oraisa that exists and to make it chal on a particular kayin, but it still doesn't work because of a gzera, but it's not a new hitchayvut. Says the Gemara, now this is interesting. So what is this machlokas? It seems to be a machlokas tanoim. Omar Rava Gitanoi. Oreva yotzea achar chitum shtorot. So let's say we have a shtar which was properly made out. Reuven owes Shimon $1,000, and it's signed by witnesses, such and such a date in this place. And underneath the signature of the witnesses, we have someone writing in that I am a guarantor for the above loan, but it was not signed by the witnesses. Now, the guy admits that this is definitely his writing and that he was mitchayev. So the question is, can you collect from using this as a shtar to collect it from this guy? Or could you even collect it maybe from people that had bought property from the guy subsequent to this? So there was a maisa like this. Ma'aseh balafdei Rabbi Shmuel. And Rabbi Shmuel said, you can use this, but only as a baal peh, because basically you have no way of providing the guarantee for the buyer, who has no way of finding out that this was a chiyuv on the property that he had bought. So Benana said to him, you cannot even collect from the chasim that are b'nei chorin. Lo mechun chasim b'nei chorin, v'lo min chasim mishu'ab badim. Because this is not signed. And basically, even though you handed it over in front of witnesses, that's not a way to be mechayiv yourself. Now, this is exactly the same machlokas it appears, right? So Rabbi Shmuel said to Ben Anas, well, why? I don't understand. I mean, it's a chiyuv. He's admitting that it's a chiyuv. So why can't he collect it on this basis? So even if Ben Anas is tiny, it doesn't mean that there's a chiyuv from before. But why can't it be a chiyuv now when he's admitting that he wrote it? And let me at least collect from B'nai Chorin. Omar lo, so Ben Anas says to him, because look, if somebody is choking somebody and he's about to kill him because he owes him money, and now a friend of the person who owes the money comes along and says, let him go, let him go, I'll pay you. So the halacha over there is that that's not considered to be a guarantee of payment. Why? Shelo al munato yilvahu. The din of collecting from a guarantor is only where the loan was made on the basis of the guarantor. Since over here the guarantor is only coming in after the loan was already made and signed and delivered, so there's no way he can be mechayev himself in this way. And therefore, in the case where the person signs, says Ben Anas to Rabbi Shmuel, signs on the loan that's already signed and delivered, he signs that he wants to be a guarantor. He cannot be mechayev himself at this point because it wasn't lent on that basis. So now we have this additional machlokas here, right? So first of all, we're questioning whether you're considered to be mechayev by having written something and giving it in front of witnesses. And then there's a separate question over here, whether it's possible to be mechayev yourself as a guarantor if everything has been signed and delivered before. Okay. So now, if this is the case, Rava says, I would think that Rabbi Yochanan was going on leave with Rabbi Shmuel, right? And because he said that if you give an unsigned, I mean, just a piece of paper that says that I owe you, and you give it to them in front of witnesses, it's the equivalent of really being made at and saying, Atem Eidat. Okay, that's what Rabbi Shmuel says over here. That since I wrote it out, even though the witnesses never signed on it, it's still enough to be mechayev me. It was given over in front of the witnesses. Whereas Reish Lakish seems to be going Domar Kaben Anas, because he says that even though the guy admits this, it's not a yischaivus and it's not a raya to a previous yischaivus. So isn't this a machlokes tanoim? Says the Gemara, wait a second over here. Nobody would argue, Aliba de Ben Anas, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish would both agree that you're not able to be Mechayev yourself. That's what Ben Anas says, Beferish. So he certainly is not going to be Mechayev someone to a halva, but he says that to say that Reish Lakish cannot go like Rabbi Shmuel, that's not true. It's true that Rabbi Yochanan never meant to go like Ben Anas. They were arguing, the two of them, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, binogea what the sheet is, Aliba de Rabbi Shmuel. So kipligi Aliba de Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, well, what do you want? I'm saying exactly what Rabbi Shmuel says. I'm saying that you just have a piece of paper that says I owe you, and that's considered to be a hida. Remember, we're going quite to Rashi and Tosfos. That's considered to be a hida to an existing chov. So then, certainly, if the chov was already made out and you've been the guarantor, you can also be mitchayev. As Reish Lakish says, no, I can go according to Rabbi Shmuel as well. Because atkan lo kam Rabbi Shmuel hasam. Rabbi Shmuel only said that this type of verbal or non-legally written commitment is chal, is because there is a real shibud d'oraisa. The shibud d'oraisa is because of the actual existing loan. Masha ein kein, according to the case that we have over here, so then I would say no, but I would say he would be maidat. Because in this case, where I'm arguing with Rabbi Yochanan, we're talking about lo shayach shibud d'oraisa. You cannot, there is no existing, the pashut way of the understanding this is actually the way the Miri understands it, which is that if there is an existing hischaivus as in the case of the halva'ah, so then you can bind yourself to an existing shibuda, but you cannot create a shibud from nothing. And that's what you, Rabbi Yochanan, are claiming, that the guy could simply write out where it's not in any way backed up by a clear-cut existing shibud. This is the simplest way of understanding the sugya. But the way that most understand what's happening over here is that what we're doing, Reish Lakish is dining, that the way that you understood the machlokas between Rabbi Yishmael and Bananas is not correct, right? The way that we understood it before is that there's two separate issues. Can you be a meida to something that is a chiyah from before? And can you be mechayev yourself? Separate question, can you be mechayev yourself as a guarantor in a case where you weren't the guarantor before? Okay, now we're saying no. Actually, that's not true. Rabbi Yishmael would agree, I'm saying with Bananas, that you cannot consider something to be a clear hoida'ah on an existing chov. And the only machlokas between Rabbi Yishmael and Bananas was the question of, is this a way to become a guarantor, or does a guarantor need to be the thing that made the loan possible, so that the person who lent can say, well, I only would lend the money because the guarantor was here? But that's because a guarantor is always considered to be mitchayev by his commitment when the money changes hands, because that is very serious indeed. That's a shibud. Mashenkin, in this case, what's the shibud? It's not just saying that it exists. So therefore, I hold that they were never even talking about the case that's here. And therefore, forget about it being a machlokas tanai. So let's get back to Rav Gittel. Now, remember that Rav Gittel said that we have a concept called piska, and we can have psikta, shtare psikta. So let's remember what he said. Om Rav Gittel, Om Rav, kama ata noten levincha, kach v'kach. Kama ata noten levitcha, kach v'kach. Ondu v'kichu, konu, without making any need for an act of a kinyan. And in fact, hein, hein advar imanik nin ba'anira, this is precisely what would be completely binding without a kinyan. Now, Rava just wants to make it clear that you understand what Rava is saying. Remember, this was Rav Gittel quoting Rav. Well, my Rava, I would say on my own, if you had asked me, I would have said, like, the first thing that jumps into your mind is that in a case where you are going to be the recipient of the Kiddushin, so you're responsible for Kiddushin, you get the moment of the Kiddushin. So, Mistavra Milta de Rav Bibito Nahara, the Kamati Hana'a Liyade. Because even though the father has not done an act of a kinyan sid or anything, but the Maisi is going to end up getting this kiddushin, so it's where he's serious about it, because money passes in. But in the case where he's just talking about his daughter, who's already an old maid of 12 and a half, you know, he's not getting anything out of this. So he could not be Mechayev himself just by saying it. I would have thought that, but I swear to God, that's not true. Of course, Rav was talking about even a bogeret, and the proof is in the remainder of the statement. If you're not going to say that you could be betrayev even on a bogeret, so how do you explain the fact that the boy's father is considered to be Mechayev himself over here? What does he get out of it? Mayana ayitle, there's no otuliyode. So therefore, it's not dependent on your getting something out of it. So what is it dependent on? Why is it that we consider this to be such a binding context that it's going to be mechayev without any kinyan? It's clearly through the very fact that these people are feeling the sense of the chashivas of the wedding, that they're expanding, that they have become mechutanim, that itself is not because of a monetary hana'a of any kind, and therefore this is chal on a bogeret as well. Now the question is whether that type of agreement, which is only oral, so Amar Le Ravina Le Ravashi, can you write them up or not? Nitnu li katev, or lo nitnu li katev. And if you can write up this tnoi that did not have a kinyan, so then that would mean that you're able to collect with the shtar, even from the chasim hamishu ubadim. But is this something that allows you to collect on the level that it should be a shtar. Because basically, normally, when we make a shtar, we make the shtar on the basis of an actual kinyan. And in that sense, it's not the, over here, the shtar that's going to be able to create the ischaifas. The shtar is just writing down that verbal agreement that created the ischaifas. So then the problem is, if that's the case, it isn't a normal shtar. So you wouldn't be able to go after the nechasim ha-meshu'ubadim. It's a different question whether you can write it up. That's something else. Amar lei, lo. Lo nitnu li katev. You can't actually make a shtar out of it, because then you'd be able to go after nechasim ha-meshu'ubadim. And since there was no kinyan, you don't have a right to go after nechasim ha-meshu'ubadim. Eisfe, is that true? Ha-pikhin, look at our Mishnah. And now we understand why all this was brought here. Remember the very closing words of the Mishnah? That if people had any brains, what they would write, note that word, what they would write was, Amanat sha'azunet bitecha meshanim, by adding the words, kol zman sha'atimi, as long as our marriage survives. Now, that means writing. That means that we do have an actual written shtar, even though we said that the only way that he was mischayev himself was by making it part of sikta, and that this took place at the Tnayim, and that having agreed to take care of her kids, they then went ahead and got married, and were considering this to be binding. And here it says kotvim. I don't know. Well, you can't just use the word kotvim. Means that this is the way they would come to an understanding. So when it says kotvim, it means that's what they would say. What? A Mishnah would use the word kotvim for something that's only amira? I mean, that's not being very careful with your language. B'kori leila amira k'tiva? Absolutely, says the Gemara. I will bring you an example. Let's now take a look at the Mishnah that we had before. Hakotev l'ishto, din u'dvorim en li b'nechasayich. So remember that Mishnah? That if you want to keep your hands off of the nechasei melug, we had that whole question, you'd have to say to, not to them, not to perotem or perot perotem. You'd have to specify that it's your heirs as well. But anyway, so it said over there, Hakotev. And yet Rabbi Chiya said there in the Brisa that the Mishnah does not mean Kotev. The Mishnah says that this is true even if it's Omer Le'ishto. So you see that we are using the word Amira for Ketiva and Ketiva for Amira. So that's what we did over here. Okay, fine. I got another problem with what Rav Ashi is saying over here. Ein Kotvim, this is a Mishnah, this is the Mishnah of Bava Basra. Ein Kotvim Shtarei Erisin V'Nisuin Elamidat Shnehem. You cannot write out a shtar. Now, what a shtar erisin seems to mean, we're assuming that it's the equivalent of shtar psikta. In other words, you had made a meeting that we call tnoyim, and we're calling that the shtar about the tnoyim for the erisin. So that's called shtar erisin. You need to have both tzadim agreed and that this can be written up. But it's quite clear that if you do get the agreement, Hamidat Shneihem, you can. And that would mean that we have the shtari psikta that you could be able to use for collecting from the chasim mishubonim. So why did Rav Ashi say absolutely not? Says the Gemara, because that's not what a shtar erisin is. A shtar erisin is not shtari psikta. It is a shtar erisin. What's wrong with you? As the Mishnah in Kedushin says, there are three ways to affect erisin. B'kesef, b'shtar, u'b'viyah. This is that shtar. And it says on a piece of paper, hare at mikudeshetli. That's all. And therefore, what it's saying is that you need to have both the chosa and the kala be aware that this is being written, kotvim, as a shtar erisin. And it's not enough to go to a woman and to say to her, that I would like to be Mekadesh you, and she agrees, and then hand her a previously written shtar that you had ordered, even though it was written Lishma, but she didn't know about it. For some reason, it says over here that that's not kosher. And that would be true according to Rav Papa and Rav Shravia, because the Itmar katvo Lishma, the Shalomidata. Let's say they write Hareat Mekudeshet Li, Lishma of a particular Isha that is going to be given the shtar. And that much is necessary, because the dinim of shtar for kedushin is learnt out from the pasuk of v'yatzah v'hayta, that a woman is the same in the yitziah with a get as she is in the knisa and the v'hayta, which means that if a get has to be written lishma, that a shtar erisin has to be written lishma. But now the question is, does it also have to be written mida'ata? So suppose you write it lishma, but you didn't first tell her that you're going to be doing that. And then afterwards, you get up the guts to try to get her to agree to marry you, and then you hand her the shtar. So what's the din? So Rabbah and Ravina say she's mekudeshet, because all you need is the writing at lishma. But Rav Pop and Rav Shari, I say, no. Ain't a mekudeshet. You need to have the das shnehem, both of the chasen and of the kala. So basically, that's what Rav Pop and Rav Shari are saying, that the Mishnah means. And therefore, there is no such thing as the erisin, meaning shtar psik. That's not what we're talking about. And that's because, in this case, you need to have the das of the makne. And that's also included in v'yatzah v'hayta. The one who is makne, the rishus of the isha to herself in the gerishin, is the Baal. And the one who's makne the rishus of herself to her husband is the woman who is accepting the kedushin. Therefore, they taina that you need to have both. Toshma. Another question that we have about Ravashi saying that this cannot be written up. Toshma. If it says in the Mishnah that if the two guys that had both committed, husband number one and then husband number two, and they both die, that the deal is that their own kids are only going to be given from the Chosid B'nei Chorin because they are heirs. Masha Enken, this stepdaughter, she is able to collect even from the Chosid Mishu Uvadim because she is a Ba'alat Chol. Now, if that's what it's talking about, then how is she exactly collecting as a Ba'alat Chol if she doesn't have a shtar? So I don't get it. You said the case is that the chiyuv was actually encumbered by the statement that was at the time of the tanai. And now we're saying, beferish in the Mishnah, that that can be written up as a shtar, and then you can go and collect with it. So how could Ravashi say that you can't collect? You certainly can, and you certainly can write up a shtar. Nah, that's different. Our question about shtari psikta was where there was no kinyan, but this is talking about where there was a kinyan. So, it's different. But if it was only the classic Rav Gittel of Merav case, where you made an agreement but didn't make any kinyan, then ain't a chinami. Dalacha could be like Ravashi, and they could not collect with it, says the Gemara. But then, if that's the case that you're talking about, you made a kinyan, so then their own daughters also should be able to collect from the Chasim Mishu Badi. And you say that no, they only have a right of heiresses. So why doesn't the kinyan, if you made a kinyan, the daughters should be provided for, both for your own daughter and for her daughter? The Mishnah doesn't make sense. No, the Mishnah is talking about you made a kinyan for the stepdaughter, but you didn't make a kinyan for your own daughter. What? You can't just arbitrarily set up a case so that it works out that way. It's absurd. Umay, Pascha. What? You're just claiming we made a case like that so that everything should suddenly work out as you believe? It's crazy. Says the Gemara, no, it's not crazy. Because even if you included your own daughter in the kinyan, she's still not going to be able. The kana miyada does not affect your daughter. Why? Because the case of the stepdaughter, she was alive at the time that he made this agreement with her mother when he went to marry her mother. So that's why it's a kosher kinyan. But your own daughter, you hadn't been born yet because you're just going to marry her now. Over there, lo mani lo kinyan. So you can't do it if she doesn't exist in the world. It's a lo bali ayla, and therefore you didn't achieve anything. So by definition, what we're saying is kishakonu lezeh velo konu lezeh, that's a given. That's a lo konu lezeh. I don't understand. How do you know that they didn't exist before? How do you know? What do you mean, how do I know? Because he's marrying a woman that was married to another guy and has a daughter. No, no, not necessarily. I mean, the Mishnah is covering any cases. Why can't the case be that he divorces his wife after his daughters were already born the first time, right? So she had been married to a guy. She had her own daughters from that guy. And then she wants to get married to him. Makes a deal with him, 5 years of support. They live together for a couple of years, have two daughters of their own. And now he divorces her. And then they get back together again. So basically, in that case, if he made a kinyan, I want my daughters to be supported. So wouldn't that kinyan be chal on all her daughters, the daughter she had with him and the daughter that she had with the guy that she had married before him? I mean, you can't just create a case in the Mishnah that won't cover all of the possibilities. So therefore, we're going to have to come up with a different reason. Ella, the difference between the daughters and her daughter is because ihi deleta b'tnai beit din. Remember that her daughter that's not from him is not covered by the ketuvah definition. So she's not a t'nai beit din. So therefore, you go ahead and you make the kinyan for her. But your own daughters is part of the t'nai beit din, which is the virtual ketuvah, so to speak, that is held in business. So therefore, you don't have an act of kinyan because there's anyway a yischaivus for kinyan. What? Well, because there's a chayvus, now it's worse? I don't understand. Should be better. Me, Gregor, you understand? Her rights are less because of the fact that the Besdin has a standing at chayvus for a ksuba that will cover over your own daughters? What's the sense in that? Okay, I'm sorry, you're right. I'll give you another reason. You know why his own daughters cannot go and collect from the Menachasim Mishubadim? Because since anyway, Isnu B'tnai Besdin, therefore we are worried that he might have given her a safe deposit box to cover over the Yitzchayvut that is an obvious kind of Chiyav. And since he knows that it's a Chiyav in Besdin, so maybe he took care of it. Marsha Einkein, there's no reason why he would do that to his wife's daughter. That has nothing to do with the question of whether we have a right to put this into writing. So therefore, we just have another question, which is an issue that we've brought up before in terms of Tnae Ketuvah. We're worried about Tsrari. Tsrari meaning some type of container worth money or safe deposit box, and that would apply here too. Now, the Mishnah says that the husband cannot say if she gets divorced, well, when she comes to me, I'll take care of her. He has to go. This is something very strange. He has to go to the place where the mother is living. What do you mean the mother is living? Why can't he just say he has to take it to her? Omer of Chista, because the Mishnah is trying to teach us something. And this teaches us that a mother has custody over a daughter in the event of a divorce. And because of that, he's always going to need to go where she is. And even if now there are heirs that are saying, it's not right that we should have to continue paying support because we have to pay support as if she's living on her own. In this house, we've got like 20 people that are all eating off of the estate, all of the kids. And if she were living here, then it would cost us half to support her because we have all of these savings from the scale of the way that we're supporting everybody else. Even so, she can insist that she wants to live with her mother. Wait a minute. How do you know? Maybe we're talking about a child over here. How do you know that we're talking about a grown daughter? Maybe we're dealing with a katana, and the only reason that she gets custody in this case is because we had an awful story. And it's not because that there's a normal halacha that a mother gets the custody. It's because that we don't trust the heirs of the father with this child. That's what it is, because it was actually a Maisa Shahaya, which we'll see. Mishum Maisa Shahaya. And what was that? The Tanya. Misha Meit V'nyer Ben Katan Limo. So in this case, I mean, it's a similar in terms of the thinking. Somebody leaves a young son to the mother. She's his wife. And now the father's children say, look, you know, you're supposed to get mezonos, but it's much cheaper if this kid will move into us because we're supporting 20 people here. You know, another one barely matters. And the mother says, no, I want him to stay with me. We leave him with the mother, and we don't leave him with anyone that is in a position to inherit him. Why? Because Maaseh Haya Ushechatu Erev HaRishon. There was an incredible maaser where they insisted that the child should stay with them so that they can have these savings of scale. And once they did that, and they killed him the first night that he moved in with them, because he would stop them from getting that part of the Yerusha. So we want to get rid of him. So that's why we're claiming we want him to stay here. And therefore, since he's a child, and if there's any way that they could have a reason to want to kill him, then we're not going to allow it. So how do we know that our mission is not talking about exactly the same thing? We don't want this Ketana to be with her brothers, because they may end up trying to get rid of her, because otherwise they're going to have to pay the Asirit. Remember that 1/10 of the estate is set aside for her to be set up for a wedding. So that may be the reason. But what makes you say it's because a mother always gets custody? Says Rav Chisda, because even Cain, it should just say they have to bring, these husbands have to bring the support to wherever she is. It has nothing to do with the mother. Why would it say to bring it wherever the mother is? That's the whole point of mentioning the mother. Shmat mina, bat etzel ha'em, lo shna gedola, velo shna ktana. And that explains that there's actually a custody question over here, and that a mother has a right to custody, whether she's a ktana or whether she's a gedola. In the case of a ktana, obviously we need to protect her with the mother. And even in the case of the gedola, we need the mother's influence on the child in raising her.